When our stories are told, everything changes. One of our favorite topics on Let's Coach is aging. Guests have discussed how to navigate through life as we age and if there is any value left in us. Should we just be done with life, or is there more? Our guest today, author Grace Salmon, has taken these concepts and captured them in what will be an award-winning book, The Eves. When our stories are told, everything changes. The book follows the main character, Jessica, as she navigates a new chapter in her life and takes us through a journey of difficult conversations about family, age, race, sexuality, honesty, and death in life. Grace is joining us on this episode to talk about aging and when it's time for us to stop living. But before we get to that, hello, good afternoon, evening, morning, wherever you may be. My name is Carolyn Owens, the host of Let's Coach. Let's Coach is a show that brings the best from the coaching world for you to use in your everyday life. And we talk about what coaching can do for you. We bring you some great small business ideas and some good news stories and stories about people paying it forward in their everyday lives. Now, when I'm not hosting the show, I serve to help you up-level your skills so you can up-level your income, your career, your business, or your life. Now, I love to connect with our guests, our listeners. So if you really have been enjoying the show, I encourage you to share the episode with someone you know who would definitely love to hear it. And you can connect with me by visiting my connection hub. Just go to carolyn360.com. And you're going to see all my social media links, a link to my blog, my website, everything you need to connect with me. And I'll also put you in connection with any guest that's been on the show. So definitely check it out. Now, joining us today is author Grace Salmon, who truly has a passion for storytelling. Writing is her voice. Communicating is her skill. The Eves is her fourth book. And her debut novel. Now, Grace grew up on Long Island, New York, and spent many years in Washington, D.C. And you guys know I always talk about the DMV area, the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And so it's great when you have someone who's actually been in the area on the show. And there, while in D.C., she raised her two children and established and owned an educational consulting firm operating in 32 states. Few individuals have her experiences of successfully working in the United States urban, suburban, rural, and tribal land high schools. She's also an entrepreneur, starting two nonprofits and her own consulting company, GMS Partners Incorporated. Grace has been recognized in Who's Who in American Education and by the Secretary of Defense as a member of the Joint Civilian Orientation Council. So let's give a warm Let's Coach welcome to author Grace Salmon. Welcome to the show.
Carolyn, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to being with you.
And I've been waiting to have this opportunity to interview you, so I am excited to have you here. Now, you have a great, successful career working with diverse backgrounds as an educator and business owner, but what led you to start writing?
Well, I think I've always been a writer. I started writing when I was a little girl. I'd write little stories to my parents. I would rat out my brothers and sisters. So I always liked the medium of writing. I also think I'm braver when I write sometimes than when I speak. So I found a strength in writing that I didn't always have in an oral communication. When I was in an educational consulting environment, it was just important to write a lot, whether it was articles or whether it was my books. It was a way of communicating and engaging with a broader group of educators. But when I began to transition out of a full-time career and begin to make all these questions about where does my life go from here, I found that same voice in writing. It was the idea that I could help puzzle out some of my own questions by writing, and all of a sudden, all of these characters began to play in my head.
Oh, wow. And you launched your most recent book, The Eves, during what we're experiencing right now in globally, a pandemic. And so if you're, depending on when you're listening to this show, guys, right now we're experiencing this pandemic called COVID-19 or the coronavirus, and it truly has impacted the world. But imagine trying to launch a book during this time. You've had no book signings, no traditional book tours. This must not have been easy for you.
It isn't easy, especially if you factor in the fact that I'm a first-time novelist, and as someone who is 67, really, and I always hate to say this because I love connecting with my readers on social media, but I am really slow to want to engage in or be good at engaging in social media. So it hasn't been easy, but one of the things I really believe is true, and in your introduction, you're talking about aging, it's really important to keep learning every single day. And when I think of what I've had to learn with the back of the house things at Amazon, the back of the things house at Barnes and Noble, learning about, you know, Instagram, LinkedIn, I'm certainly in a learning curve. And then I'm really lucky too that the world is changing. Yes, I would love to do book tours, but I'm probably reaching more people today through your podcast than I would if I was having a book tour. So hopefully readers will be engaged enough to find another way to reach out and reach back in and engage with the book.
You know, that's true. That's one thing about social media and this, you know, the internet and everything we have access to today. We are able to reach people across the world, a much wider, broader audience. And I would tell you, the ease is something they need to know about, but how long did it take you to write the book?
Oh, you know, that's always a hard question. From the moment I thought about it till the moment I held it in my hand was probably 6 years. But if you really think about how long did it take me, 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, wow. Top.
So it's, you've been
my brain goes constantly. It's a scare. My brain can be a scary place.
Wow. So you were actually thinking of the concept and you were actually able to bring it to fruition. You actually were able to write this book.
Absolutely. And it's interesting to me how important it became to write it. A friend of mine said to me maybe 4 or 5 years ago, what is one thing that you would really want to do before you died? And without a blink, I said, I need to finish my book and get my book out. And that really surprised me. And what also surprised me now, though, is the very warm reaction I get from the readers. The youngest character in the book, as you know, because you did such a lovely job of really embracing the book, the youngest character is 15. The oldest is 90 plus. Yeah. And to have that diversity and really touch people, when a reader contacts me, I had one of my favorite, and I say this often, but it was so important to me, is an older woman, 94, I think she is, she wrote to me and she said, please tell me there is a sequel in my lifetime. Mm. And that's profound. I had a reader contact me and say, you know, my son doesn't talk to me. And your book gave me hope that maybe someday we'll be able to talk. Wow. Those are the things that have surprised and delighted me.
It's the power of words. It is. And I mean, you know, when you say, think about the book sequel, hey, the character's 15, she can grow up and you can do that sequel.
We still, I think at the end of the book, our oldest character is 94, so, and she's still kicking.
Yes. You know, you were recently interviewed on The Walk Show, hosted by a colleague and good friend of mine, Walker Neer. And one of the things you mentioned in that interview was that you see a difference when it comes to writing between a writer, an author, and a storyteller. Can you kind of talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, and thank you. Walker was wonderful to talk with. It was a great interview and wide-ranging. So thank you for highlighting that. This is something I'm beginning to tease out. You know, is there a difference between a writer and a storyteller and an author? I think almost anybody can learn to write if they've had good teachers, if they take the time. You know, they may not have a passionate story, but they can be a good, solid writer. Yeah. Where I'm beginning to tease things out in my own mind is the difference between an author and a storyteller, and where it's beginning to fall out in my head is who creates the best story. I don't think I'm particularly articulate about this yet, Carolyn, but sometimes, for example, there's an episode or a section in the book where one of the characters dies, and it is recounted by her husband. The character's name is Joan. And that is, for many of my readers, a very moving piece. It's also very biographical. I didn't create a whole lot in that. I retold a story. And that's where I begin to try to wrestle things out. I can tell a good story about my mom's passing, but I think that author concept for me is the creation of the whole. It's not just the retelling of the story. And I think that retelling of the story is critical, but it's that creation of the whole, the originality. And that's what I'm beginning to try to discern, even for myself.
For me, as someone who wants to, you know, write more, it really, that hearing that, when I thought, well, the difference between those three got me even thinking, because there's a lot of people out here right now who have blogs, they're blogging. But that's a different type. That's that writing, you know, that's just kind of putting something out there. But when you actually go to put a novel together and everything has to flow and it just has to be in a certain order, there's a difference in that style of writing. Would you agree?
I think you're absolutely right. And getting that flow is so important. And you don't always get it, especially when I was originally writing in some of my first drafts. Erica, the 15-year-old, on one page she'd be 15, on two pages later she'd be 17. And it was just because I was being sloppy. You know, so getting that flow together and figuring out in a novel or in any good chapter of a book, you want there to be kind of a question, some tension, some resolution, and then you want some tension so that they want to read the next page. You want your readers to go to the next chapter. And one of the things for me was discovering all the plot twists and turns. I didn't know those were going to happen.
Well, I mean, I have to admit, I read a lot of books, and throughout this year, by far, The Eves is one of my favorite. And in fact, for me, it ranks in the top of all the books I've ever read. Can you tell us a little bit?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Can you tell us a little bit about the storyline without giving too much away?
Absolutely. So The Eves is about a woman someplace between 50 and 60 who has really lost her way. She doesn't have a relationship with her children, which was her primary reason for living. She's kind of let go of her body. She's let go of her looks. She's not finishing her doctoral dissertation. The only thing she hasn't really let go of is her vodka and her sense that, you know, of guilt. And she really is very, very lost. And luckily, she has a very, very bossy friend who takes her down to a beautiful spot on the Chesapeake Bay, where a group of older women are deciding to live together and their final years. And they're white people and black people and Latinx people. And there are some wonderful, strong male characters as well. And Sonia tells her that you must leave your mark on this land, Jessica. Everyone else leaves their mark on the land, and you need to figure that out. And she's very reluctant, but when she gets down to this place and starts telling their stories, everything changes. And there are plot twists and turns. It's in Maryland, it's in DC, it's in Tanzania, we go to Norway, and everyone's life changes. Jessica's changes, and each of the oldies changes as well.
Now, the oldies, you titled the book The Eves. What does that mean to you?
That's a great question too, because originally, and I think this is important for anybody who's interested in writing, it's great to have a beta group who can tell you, you are not all that. Because I definitely had people read the book and say, this is great and this is not. So the original title of the book was going to be called Living Lessons, because here's these old ladies and they're still living and they're giving all these lessons out, not in a teaching sort of way, but by the way they're living their lives. And Jessica is living and she's learning. So that was the original title. And everybody hated it. They thought it sounded too much like a self-help book. Many reasons they didn't like it. So what I began to do is really think about these old ladies. Now, the old ladies are probably between 70 and 94. And they are not done. And they very much consider themselves beginning. They are beginning a new movement. They're beginning a new way of living. I refer to them as women of color and colorful women. And they are starting something. So that's where I got the idea is they're beginning. They're Eves. They are mothers. So like Adam and Eve, they are giving birth to something very different than what we have seen.
They're starting something and they're doing this. The book, the story takes place in what we call the DMV area, that DC, Maryland area. What made you choose that as the setting, as the background of the story?
I think it's important to write about what you know. I raised my two children in Montgomery County, Maryland. And I spent, from 1975 till about 10 years ago in that DC area, even though I was traveling about 200 days a year. That's a whole other story. even though I was traveling that much, DC was home. And when I began to envision Jessica, I needed her to be in a house. And the house that I chose is actually a house on Hobart Street in Northwest Washington, for your readers or your listeners who know about that. It's a very real street. And it is the house that my daughter lived in when she was in college. And so it is kind of run down, but she and I always talked about how much fun it would be to renovate the house. And there's a lot of that. So that's a wonderful thing about being an author. You get to make stuff up. So I didn't get to renovate the house with my daughter. We got to renovate it in the book. And the wonderful part about that house and the truth of that house is if you crawl out of Jessica's window, which is her office window in her house on the second floor, which sits above her porch, and you crawl out her window and it's a flat roof right there, on a certain night when the wind blows from the west, yes, honestly, you can hear lions roar from the DC Zoo.
Oh, was that how it really was?
Yes. Absolutely. You can still, it's absolutely true. We would sit there and you can hear the lions if the traffic's just the right way. And it's 4 miles from the White House? It's just up 16th Street and make a left.
Wow. You know, in the book, you do have many different types of people, from white, Hispanic, Native American, Black, and gay. Some would criticize you for trying to have these different viewpoints, to be able to speak from these different viewpoints. What made you take this approach for the book?
I think diversity is really important to me. I don't want to live in a white bread world. I also have the opportunity to, when I was an educator, I worked Anacostia. Anacostia shows up a lot in the book. And frequently I was the only white girl anywhere in my work. And so I have a real sensitivity that I don't know it all. Let's together learn. And I just know that my life is much richer in a diverse world. I think, though, I haven't had any yet. I think if there is, I need to listen to it really carefully. Because as a Caucasian author, I don't have the authenticity necessarily. One of my favorite characters is Tobias. He's an older African-American doctor. He happens to own the land. For this white girl to get that voice and be respectful. I have to be humbled. I have to be open. I also have to, getting back to an earlier point, I had a beta group of diverse cultures read my book. So, you know, I had a girl who said, oh no, you are not all that. That's not right. And luckily it was not, it was tweaks. So I think from what I hear from my readers, my diverse group of readers, I think I got it pretty good, but I think that I also have to be super sensitive that I have a responsibility if I'm writing out of my culture, my culture, to do that. And I think we're in a particularly interesting time in history. You know, we can go back and look at things like, you know, Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, the Bobbsey twins. And my experience of those as a young white girl, I never felt that there was stereotyping or anything, but I was just too young not to know, or I was too young to know. So I think it's super important to listen carefully and to admit if you don't have it right, you know, to just say, of course, you know, I probably don't have it perfectly.
Well, I mean, as someone who's read the book, who's actually read it, reread some chapters and everything in between, I will say, to me, you captured so much of, you know, what's right. And one of the things, you did incorporate aspects of history into the book, well-researched, that were put into the book. And I have to say, you even educated me about some things. For example, I'm ashamed to say that I did not know that Frederick Douglass was actually in an interracial marriage, that his wife, Helen Pitts, where him, of course, everybody knows Frederick Douglass is a black male. And during that time, he married Helen Pitts, who was a white female. And she actually did a lot to preserve his legacy. I mean, that was important to her. And I asked other people about it, and they didn't know either. You know, so there are things in history and how you've got the setting that also can educate us, but it also, you know, takes us in these, to these subjects that we don't necessarily talk about. You have this multi-generational aspect in the story. Can you talk a little bit about that piece?
That was also important to me. One of the things that motivated me most to write the story was realizing that I was aging out. I was aging out of my role as entrepreneur and educator. I was certainly aging out of my role as mom because my kids were grown. I was not yet married, so I didn't have that role. So I wanted to look at this continuum of what is the entire aging process like? So I could put myself firmly in that conundrum of what's it going to be like? And then because I had all these old people in it, I could also project and have them wrestle out what some of those things would be about growing older. I also think that we don't listen well to each other. I think almost anybody today would agree that we don't do a very good job of listening to other points of view. And I wanted to create a situation where people did listen, because at some point that opportunity is gone. Mm-hmm. You know, your parent dies, you're estranged from your parent, you move away and you don't have proximity. And those opportunities for questions fade away. And there's also a time where I'm a parent of two children. There's a time where you so want to tell your children things. And I don't mean in the way of saving them from their own mistakes that are important for them to make, but you want to tell them something, or you want to be valued because you want them to say, well, I had that struggle too, or I had that accomplishment too. And they're just not ready to listen. They're just not, and that's okay. So that's where that continuum comes in.
So, I mean, you somewhat have answered this question, but why is it important that we tell our stories?
I think that, first of all, it's all we have. But when we tell our stories, things really change. People understand us better. We find that we have more in common. We leave a legacy. We leave our mark on the world. There's a scene in the book where the oldies are talking about what mark they're going to leave on the world. And they struggle with that. And 15-year-old Erica is just like, what is wrong with you? You know, I'm going to always, every time I hear a lion, I'm going to think about Aunt Jessica. When I look at Orion in the sky, I'm going to think of Tobias teaching me about the constellations. And that's going to be true whether I'm, you know, here next summer or whether I'm here in 100 years. So I'm a firm believer that when we call out someone's name, they somehow live in us still. So I just think it's important.
So, I mean, and you were saying just as important as telling the story is listening to them. Do you think that this is something that we've lost along the way?
I think so. One of the characters in the book is part Native American, and her mother, who is, of course, deceased, was a great storyteller. And that character herself was estranged from her mom in some ways, didn't listen to the stories as well. She's lost part of her Native American heritage. And I think that we have. I also think that for many families, good, bad, or indifferent, this idea of COVID, this horrible plague of COVID, is putting families together again. And they have the opportunity to have those kinds of conversations. In the back of the book, there are a lot of book club questions, but I also particularly included just a set of random questions that have nothing to do with the book. And I posted those on my website as well, so that, excuse me, someone could just go there and pull out a question. One of the things I do in the very few instances where I can be live with someone, I've created these conversation cards that have the front of the book on one side, and then they have questions on the other. And some of them are related to the book and some of them aren't. So I just pulled one, and the question is, what legacy, gift, talent, or life lesson do you want to leave your children? So my hope there would be that, you know, you could have a family or girlfriends or any group just pull a card or go to my website or look in the back of the book, and they would have that opportunity to have a conversation because it just prompts them to do it.
That's an awesome idea to accompany the book, to have the conversation cards, because there, I will say, there's a lot of conversation that can come from this book, because it does touch on so many topics. And you've mentioned, you know, we've talked about that right now, we're going through this pandemic, COVID-19, the coronavirus. And, you know, the world in the book, the characters' worlds have evolved and changed over time. And our world right now is changing. It's becoming a new normal. And it's one of those things where people will often just stand still and watch, or, I mean, how do you see that? Is it a time for us to redefine ourselves, or should we just sit still and watch what's happening?
Oh, I would never be one to say sit still and watch anything. I would like to be more active in some ways. You know, my children are both very politically active, and I admire that. I am not. I care deeply. I like to think that I'm knowledgeable, but I don't give of myself in that way. I think that COVID has definitely changed how we interact. It's made us reassess who we want to spend time with. Yes. I think the really weird confluence of COVID, Black Lives Matter, this entire election process, there is some, I'm not particularly, you know, cosmo-y, but there is something that is causing us all to pause. And I don't think that's a bad thing to reassess. And that really, the women in the book really are suggesting that, to give you that opportunity to realize you're not done and that we can be masters of our own destiny.
So what happens when we share and we tell our stories? What can happen?
Oh, I think anything can happen. You know, it could be something as easy as just listening that somebody's having a bad day. I hate to make it so trivial, but it's, and that's not trivial, but it's small, right? And I think that if we listen carefully, we then have the opportunity to just reach out in some small way, send somebody a text that says, sounds like you're having a bad day, hope it gets better.
Yeah.
So we can change things in little ways. I also think that if we tell our stories and listen well, that other people will then share our stories. I love that you say the book's going to be an award-winning book, and you know, you know it's going to be a Netflix special, we should hope.
It should be.
Thank you. You and I will try to make that happen. I think that unless I say that that's important, that I want that to happen, that it can happen, nobody else is going to know that. So the connections we make when we listen, when we tell our stories. And I think, too, if a story is well told, and I don't mean necessarily the way I've written The Eaves, but if we really listen, we are changed forever. I frequently talk about the song that John Prine wrote about hello in there, hello. And it's the story about an old couple and they feel very useless. And she says, you know, don't pass me by and stare as if I didn't care, as if you didn't care. Say hello in there, hello. And that changed me in a lifelong way. I never pass an older person without meeting them in the eye and saying, hi, good afternoon. I think that a very poignant scene for me, the Eaves is sandwiched with two different pieces of music, both by a group called Sweet Honey in the Rock, which you may be familiar with. Oh, so amazing. And I have links to their music on my website, which is gracesalmon.net. And I know you'll put it up when you post the podcast. But those two pieces of music so both inspired me and haunted me that they also changed the way I look at the world. The one piece, there's a piece called Memories to Teach Me. And it's by Dr. Blackwell, who used to teach at Howard University. She may still teach there. I'm sorry, I don't know that part. And my daughter sang it at the side of my mother's coffin.
Oh, wow.
And it says, basically, I want to listen, and now you're gone. I need you to teach me. I need your words to teach me. I need you to take care of me. I need to, you used to rock me in the cradle of your arms. And it transformed me.
You know, music and words can so, you know, do that. And I mean, to me, that's like that best kind of book to read where it really touches you and it makes that difference. And I think that's why, you know, authors and storytellers do share, because that's it, you know, for someone who's truly in that place, it's not about hundreds of thousands of people reading it. It's that right person that's going to make a difference and have that ripple effect, you know, that can change so much. But let's talk a little bit about the characters in the book.
Okay.
Now, I have to say, as I read the book, I could see and feel the characters. Again, that's like, to me, the best kind of book to be able to read, to be able to get lost in these characters. And I think we've already kind of said we can both see that this book would make a great movie. And Tobias, you've mentioned him as the leading male character. So I'm just curious, if there were to be a movie, who would play Tobias?
Oh, that's always a tricky one. Because there's so many fabulous older Black male actors. But if truth be told, I wrote every word with Morgan Freeman in my brain. I'm a huge fan of his, but a huge fan particularly of Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
He does so much narration there. And he's just so amazingly wise. So he would definitely be my first choice, but there are lots of other people who would.
I have to say, when I read it,
Pardon me?
You read it, you can picture the, you know, that look he had in Shawshank Redemption. And I just seen a picture of him while I was reading it. And I was like, oh my God, this is either more, for me, it was either Morgan Freeman or Danny Glover.
Yes.
And I was like, I could see both of them portraying this role, sitting in the chair, and just that, it's just, you know, he's the patriarch of the family. And you could see that. Were any of the characters based on people you know?
Yes, and that kind of goes back to that, am I an author or a storyteller? Uh-huh. One of the female characters is named Elizabeth, and she's an older Italian, kind of grumpy, kind of like Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh. You know, she's... but I will tell you, I met my version of Elizabeth 20 years ago.
Wow.
When my own mom was dying, and she just took me under her wing, and she's 90 now, and my mom's been gone a long time, and I still so value having her. There's the character Allison is very much modeled on a girlfriend of mine who is one of the most likable people I know, not with the whole thing that goes on. There's some risky stuff there. Risky stuff. Yeah, the young character Erica, when I first began to think about this book, there was a young girl who lived very close to me, and she would zip in, and as many young people, talk faster than we can listen. So yes. She was very, and her name is Erica, and she knows she's the prototype. And I think the most surprising one to people is, because of all the characters, and I love that you say they're so believable. I have had many people say, oh, they're so believable, I like all of them. But Roy, the character of Roy is, he's just not believable. He's too good, he cooks, he plays the instrument. And I have to tell you, he is exactly like my husband. From start to finish. I'll clone him and send him out, but I didn't do a whole lot of creativity there. He walks in the door every day and says, greetings, greetings. And Roy walks in the door every day and goes, greetings, greetings. So yes, there are definitely similarities.
I have to say, you know, to the listeners, when you read the book, you will see why, you know, Roy is Roy, and he's a great character in the book. Do you have a favorite character?
Tobias, for sure. I could spend eternity with him. He's so wise. He's so gentle. He's just so brilliant. So he would have to be one of my favorite characters. I love Sonia because she's so bossy, but I wouldn't want her to be my. She's so, so bossy. But she helps Jessica in very real ways. So I think sometimes my favorite characters switch around a lot. There's a lesbian couple in the book, and there are parts of them that I just love their dynamic because it's so subtly perfect.
You know,
do you?
Okay. So I would have to say my favorite character, and it's probably, I don't know that a lot of people would agree, is Jessica. Because I see so much of Jessica in women I coach and work with. There are parts of myself that I see in her that I could easily see in her. And so she's very, you know, she is so real to so many people. There's a part of her, I think, in all of us that we would see. And I do like Elizabeth. There's a lot that I love about Elizabeth. And who can't not like Roy? I mean, you know, I was thinking as I'm reading, who would play Roy in a movie?
And so who did you think?
You're going to laugh. I came up with Kevin Costner.
Absolutely.
I think Kevin Costner is Roy. Or if we kind of go, there's an element of Beau Bridges that could play that role. Very, you know, different actors, but I could see there's a scene where Jessica looks at Roy, and I'm like, that's Kevin Costner all the way she described what she was seeing. And Beau Bridges has a certain, when in some of his characters, if you look deep, you see this rough but softness to him. And that's
I think both of those would be great choices. I also think Harrison Ford would be a good choice.
See, I couldn't feel when I was like Harrison Ford. I could not.
Too old.
Feel. I just he wasn't Roy for me, you know. But I could see the two, the Kevin Costner like top choice. And then if he's not available,
who would play Jessica?
Now that one I got stuck on. Because the type of person who I would have wanted to play her is now too old to play that role. And I was like, wow, who could capture Jessica? And I got stuck. I really did on her because she's a complicated but simple character. And that person, you got to nail her. You got to have it right. And so that one would take, I haven't figured her out yet as a who could play her.
Well, it's fun to pretend though, right?
Yeah.
I know one of the things I was going to put on my website for book clubs, and I love to do book clubs. So if any of your readers have a book club and they want me to, I keep saying readers, if any of your listeners have a book club and they want me to zoom in, I'm always happy to do that.
Oh, awesome.
As long as my schedule allows, I'm happy, happy to do it. But I was going to have on my website kind of a casting call. Who would you... And I just haven't gotten around to that yet. And I think you're right. Jessica's a hard one. I have a couple of ideas in my head, but.
And I mean, that would be fun. I think you should add that to your website and see what people come up with. Do they agree with us? Uh-huh. And speaking of Jessica, the main character, you know, like I said, the book touches on so many elements of life. But I'm just curious, when you wrote her, and I'm sure you hear this from a lot of the readers, is she seen as a dishonest person?
This is something I really wrestle with. So if you look at my trailer of the book, the opening line, it's a video trailer,
yes.
And it says, Jessica Barnett is a liar. And I really struggle with that because even though she's not my favorite character, I obviously care really deeply for Jessica. She is struggling, and she does tell a couple of really big lies. And one of
big ones.
Big lies. Like, we're talking plot twists and turns. I didn't see that coming lies. And I had one of my early readers say that he couldn't like her at all because she was a liar. Hmm. And I wrestled with that for weeks. Because not that I think it's ever okay to lie, because when you talk to me, what you see is what you get. I'm pretty straightforward. But if she doesn't tell these lies, she's not going to function at all. And she's already doing a whole lot of functioning. So she has some big secrets that she lies about. And I think that's a question for readers to wrestle with. Is she a liar? Is it ever okay to lie? How important is honesty? How honest are we with each other?
Yes. I think, but the one thing of the deception, the lie, I don't even like to call it a lie. I like deception better, is so real. It's so relatable that I think people, that you understand and you get to see who she really is. Despite that, in the book, she's around, as you said, 50 to 60 years old. And we see this age of 50, 60 for women as this wake up call. What are some of the challenges you see that women face when they're starting to reach those ages?
I think the first one, and I hear this echoed in so many women I speak to, is that idea of a changing role. I know even for myself, you know, I was Joe and Bob's daughter. I was, you know, the wife of my first husband. I was the president of my company. I was the author. I was the parent to my kids. And in some ways, even though I felt always that I was honest and present to people, those roles gave me a safety net, if you will, to do certain things, to risk certain things. I did a lot of volunteering, for example, in my kids' school. If I had gone up and said, hi, I'm Grace Salmon, and I could help do this and that, I would feel that I was being too prideful or something. But because I was a mom, I could just say, well, I'm the mom, and I could help. So I think that losing those roles as we age is a huge thing. I think particularly losing that role as a parent, if you were very involved in that, or losing your role as a child, if you're either estranged from your parent, or if you lose a parent through death, or through something like Alzheimer's, that gradual painful loss. So part of it is that changing roles, and then discovering that you still have to now be your totally authentic self. You are who you are without the roles. And that's the real challenge. I imagine you find that in your work all of the time. Who are we? Who do we want to become? How do we share our gifts? What are our gifts? There's a character in the book who is a life coach. So very similar to you. And not based on you, but could have been. And profoundly, the character has brain cancer, and she finds it absolutely horrifying and maddening that here she is a life coach and she has brain cancer and may die. So I think that we just always have to wrestle with these questions of who do we want to be and how do we be authentic?
It's like you reach a certain point and you've identified yourself as these roles, mother, partner, spouse, you know, whatever work, career that you have. And then it's time to redefine yourself all as you go through those processes and those changes. Your children leave home. I call them mega decisions, these mega events that happen in life that kind of make us have to pause to redefine ourselves. But the hardest part, I think, is a lot of people will feel alone and they can't move past that because society tells us we're done. I mean, there's oftentimes we reach that age of 50 and 60 and it's like, what value does a woman have left to give? And relationships are heavily explored in the book, throughout the book. And there are two types in particular that stood out for me. And one is that between the parent and adult children, you know, how that then redefines. Do you, as you said, we've talked about Jessica's deception. I mean, where do we share details of our lives with our children or vice versa? Are there boundaries that should be put in place?
And I guess I would always say, of course, there should be boundaries, but you can always test those boundaries, figure out, are they appropriate boundaries? I think that the idea of those relationships is key. Research will tell us, and you know because you've read my book, I do love to do a lot of research, and I throw a lot of it into the book. Yes. Research will tell us that women live longer if they have good girlfriends. Men tend to be living longer if they have a life partner, a husband, a spouse, whatever. So I would encourage all women, particularly, to seek out true girlfriends. And that's one of the things I created with the Eves. You know, these women all came together and they're not necessarily friends, but they certainly all appreciate each other and learn from each other and love each other in I think, some really profound ways.
They do. They're very different. They're so different. But, you know, that is hard to me for a lot of women these days, is to create that where we, you know, sister friends is like what we like to say, or I like now saying the Eves, you know, that you can create that. It's, you know, we don't make time for that, but it does become important for that self-care, for our sanity, especially now. Mental health is on the rise, the mental health issues and things that are happening as we painted the picture of where we are today. But it's a very good that the bond that exist, that can be created and supported, those relationships become important. Because the other relationship in the book that stood out for me is this whole thing about dating and love as we age. It's often seen as, you know, if you're 50 or 60, why bother? It's to ew, it's gross, taboo, you know, that's the way society often views it. Do you believe that we can find true passionate love later in life?
Well, I will share with you, I'm 67 and I've been just celebrated my 8th wedding anniversary. I got divorced from my first husband on my 35th birthday.
Wow.
And I was single from the time I was 35 to the time I was 59. And absolutely, you just have to be open to it. You know, I did the internet dating thing, and for me, it was horrible. Although, you know, statistics say it can be very successful. I'm lucky in that my husband, I met back in the 90s, and we were work colleagues.
Wow.
And yeah, we stayed friends over time, and then something just changed. So absolutely, yes, you are way too young to be thinking you're over in that department. But if you are over in that department, it's also okay, because you have to be enough for yourself.
Yes, and it's funny because I hope that a lot of women that I've spoken to are listening, because that's one of these, they're at this place where they think it's too late. It's too late for me. And it's really, it's not. It's really about being comfortable, who you are, and open to receive the gift of love.
You have to be, and you know, I'm very lucky in that my partner completes me in ways that I didn't know about. As an entrepreneur, as a single mom, as somebody who was single from the time she was 35 to 59, there wasn't a whole lot that I was looking for in terms of, you know, could you take out the garbage? Could you do this? Because I knew how to do it all. So the dance of learning how to do it together has been really interesting. And how quickly, quite honestly, I've become codependent, I hope, in a good way. But it's definitely a dance. You know, strong women, I think, sometimes can be a threat. Women who have done a lot, you know, you've done so much in your career. And, you know, it's hard for us to fit those pieces in, but very much like the relationship between Jessica and Roy in the book, you know, I like my husband a considerable amount.
Hey, okay, to understand that sentence right there, guys, you need to read the book. Yeah, there's I just want to mention two more concepts kind of as we get closer to closing. I could talk to you forever, but there's this thing about sitting in two chairs at once. And this is the one thing I do want to quote directly from the book. And it goes like this. We can't stay in the past and be fully in the present, let alone see or plan for the future. You can't have your heart in two places. You can't live indecisively. You are either in one chair or another. You can't sit in two chairs at the same time. That resonated. That was such, to me, a powerful statement in the book. And even when it's where it's placed in the book, it's like the right timing for the audience to hear this. And you have to kind of read and you kind of step back and see that how many places in our lives this applies.
I think we want, you know, many women want to have it all, right? I can do this, I can do this, I can do that. And I think we can do many things, but we have to know where we are at our core. And we have to stay true to that. And it's again, we talked a little earlier about, am I a good author or am I a good storyteller? And my Elizabeth, my beautiful, beautiful Elizabeth, whose real name is Dolores, by the way, she would say to me, you can no sit in two chairs. And she shook her little finger at me and she said, Grace and Marie, you can no sit in two chairs. And that really gave me pause. And that's another thing about the gift of older women. Mm-hmm. I very lucky to, and probably continue to cultivate older women who, you know, first of all, they kind of keep me away from my own mortality. Not that I, we can all pass in a moment, but I love that concept of having an older woman who watches out for me a little bit, who does share their story. And my Dolores, who develops into Elizabeth in the book, she would say that to me, can no sit in two chairs.
Mm. You know, and I think it's important. We don't, other cultures outside of America, there's other countries and cultures who value the wisdom of the elders, the older women in the family. They have this where we can see them as, you're done. But they are the wisdom. They are the ones that people turn to. They are the ones who are, you know, held in such high esteem. And I think that's something that we're missing, the value and knowledge and the wisdom that they just have to share.
I think so too. And I think that plays out in the character of Elizabeth. You know, the other women are all trying to do stuff. You know, you've got the wonderfully ditzy woman who's raising sheep and learning how to shear llamas, and she's got a little bit of dementia starting. You know, they're going to put a GPS on her as she wanders her around. And, you know, you've got women who have broken relationships with their kids and those who don't, and some are very career driven. But Elizabeth really does think she's totally done. You know, she talks a lot about, you know, wanting to go on vacation, the time in her life where with no suitcases. She talks about it a lot. She constantly says, what do you have to do? You know, she's tired. And I think she's been worn down by a lot of things. And maybe her story changes if you read the book.
You know, and that's just it. In the book, people have to get out of their own way. When we age, do you find it's more difficult to overcome your fears and step outside of your comfort zone?
I love the way you said that we have to get out of our own way. In some ways, no. I think it's easier because we don't have all of those roles. We can just be who we are. What difference does it make? You know, I wrote the novel. Sometimes people ask me, how will you know if it's a success? Now, you and I bantered back and forth. You and I know that it's going to be when Morgan Freeman calls me up and says, but success for me, I've already had it. I'm on your show. Your listeners are listening to this. They're going to, whether they buy the book or don't buy the book, they're going to have a conversation with someone today that they wouldn't have had unless they were listening to you and me today. So in some ways, it's easier. Now, I also have to say again, it's easier because of where I am today. I think it's very important to realize not everybody has my sense of security with a strong husband, with a loving husband, with finances. You know, first of all, you never make any money if you write a book. So if you have out there, that's not going to happen. But there are many people for whom it's a continual struggle, particularly with healthcare disparities, which we're so aware of now. So I say that from my vantage point, with always wanting to listen to, it doesn't get easier. You know, it really doesn't for some people. But then I hope it gets easier by sharing our stories and having those friend networks.
You know, the ending of the book is a shocker, at least it was for me. And I don't want to give it away. You've got to read the book. But I will say, are we ever really done?
We are not ever really done. Absolutely not. And a good example of that would be, and I talk about this often because it was a surprise to me. People ask me about my process a lot. I knew the beginning of the book and I knew that twisty turny thing that we're not going to give away in the book. Yes. But I didn't know what happened after that weird twisty turny thing happened. I didn't know what was going to happen to the other characters. I also didn't know there's a character in the book named Jesper. And I don't think it's giving too much away that Jessica gives up a baby for adoption when she's quite young. And to me, that was done. Who cared? That was that. It just helped you define who she was. But one of my beta readers said to me, I need to meet him. And I was like, no, you don't. And she kept pushing me on that. So it was that unexpected thing of, oh, what happens when this character shows up? And how does he show up? And does it make a difference? So no, we are never, ever, ever done. I hope at least till my last breath, I am not done.
Yes. So who is Grace Salmon? How is she aging?
Oh, I've definitely got my COVID pounds on me. So if you had asked me 8 months ago, I would have said, pretty darn good. I think that the book has done several things for me. It has challenged me to learn in many ways that I didn't think I would have to learn, you know, all the technology, the Instagram, the Facebook, the things that I really shied away from, the marketing, the back of the house at Amazon. But what it's also taught me is there is for me, and I call it juice. I'm sure there's a better way to put it, but I have been more complete in ways because I'm writing, because I'm thinking, because I'm talking with people. I get a juice that I know when I'm happy. So for me, that's a great message that also says I need to keep doing that, whether the book is wildly successful or whether I turn to a different medium. I'm working on another novel now.
Yay.
Thank you. So I know for me, in a new way, I have to keep learning. And I have to find things that give me joy, find things that give me that juice. I have a girlfriend who makes quilts, and she can be in her zone, and she'll sit at her sewing machine at 8 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Ooh. And that's amazing. Wow. And when I'm in the right writing zone, that happens for me. And so I'm aging that way. I'm aging the way anybody who's 67 is going to age. You know, I talk in the book about, you know, the women with the hanging down breasts and the rounded stomach. And it's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. Excuse me. There's a conversation between Margaret Mary and Jessica where she's basically scolding her and says, you know, you think of us as old, but we are not done. We used to be girls and we think we still are. And I want to capture that. I want to capture that.
And that is the line, that other line that stuck with me the most is, I'm wanted to close out the show, so I'll save it and I'll get there. But it really makes you think about how am I going to live out the rest of my life. So if somebody wants to get the book and find out about the conversation cards you have that I think would be great with a book club, how can they find the book? How do they find you?
It's Grace Sammon, and it sounds like the fish, but it's spelled S-A-M-M-O-N. So gracesammon.net. You can find me under Grace Sammon Writes on Facebook. I have a Twitter account and a LinkedIn, and I know I'll try to do better at that. But you can email me at gracesammon.net. I'd happily go to your book club. There's lots of resources, music, recipes, and things like that on my website. Right now you can, just a few. I put them up there to make book clubs more interesting to people. Yeah. And some of them are real simple, like Bisquick coffee cake. I used to love making Bisquick coffee cake. And some of them are very, very elaborate. The character Jan in the book is an amazing chef. And so there's a few recipes in there. And I think that the other thing was, how to buy the book. Right now it's on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And, you know, the title of the book is The Eves, like Adam and Eve. And keep your fingers crossed. I think December 1st, we're going to have a worldwide launch of the Eves everywhere.
Oh, awesome. I will be looking for that. And I will say, one of the things for our listeners about the Grace Stitch, she sent me this small little wooden spoon. And I didn't get it at first until I read the book. And so it's actually sitting on top of my shelf next to a picture of my son and I, which is very important to me. And so that small wooden spoon has so much meaning for me. And so
thank you.
Thank you so much for that.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it. One of the things is when Jessica walks into this great house, all the wooden spoons are crammed into this jar. It's a Native American Hopi pot, just because my husband collects Hopi pots. And one of the things that the women brought with them when they decide to live in community, they all brought their spoons. And I loved the idea that, you know, this spoon cooked from this culture and that culture, and somehow they're all together. And I love the idea that we would do that and blend our cultures as women and share them that way. So I'm so glad you liked the spoon.
I did. I didn't get it at first, but then when I read the book, I was like, oh man. And so this is a question I love to ask all my guests when we close the show. You have 30 seconds to leave a message with the audience. What is that key message or that key takeaway you'd like to leave them with?
Find your joy, rely on your friends, figure out what your resources are, never be done. We are only promised today. So enjoy today, but plan for tomorrow.
And I want to definitely thank you. Thank you so much for being with us. And I have to say, this book made me laugh. It did. I am not one to easily cry, and it did make me cry. And I hope that our listeners will share in this experience. You will have to step outside of your comfort zone as you read through this, and you get to think of how are you living your life? How do you want your journey to be? And I understand that I have a choice. The name of the book again is The Eves. It's a novel by Grace Salmon. And I like one of the other strong comments or quotes from the book for me is, once upon a time we were girls and we still believe we are. So thank you again for joining us, Grace. It has truly been a pleasure to interview
you. It's an honor. What a pleasure. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
So for our listeners out there, please stay tuned. We've got a lot of other exciting episodes coming your way. I encourage you to follow us, leave a review on one of your favorite listening platforms. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts. Hey, we're on Amazon Music now, guys. So definitely check us out, find us there, and leave us a review. And until next time, stay safe. And remember, if it ain't broke, make it better. Have an awesome, blessed week, everyone. Bye-bye.